Hello and welcome, Dan Pisoni, to At Sixes and Sevens.
Thank you, Margaret.
You're welcome. Dan, you're an experienced gardener, and you're between 60 and 80 years old. And today we're going to talk a little bit about why you're in the garden so much.
Frankly, I'm probably in the closer end to the higher 70s, but I got into gardening way back when I was probably in high school, and used to have a paper route. And on the paper route, many of the older ladies and people that were on my paper route needed their lawns mowed. And after pushing the lawnmower, because we didn't have power mowers back then, they also asked me if I was involved in gardening of any kind. And so they kind of taught me way back then, because we had the same weeds 50, 60 years ago as we still do today. And so that's generally how I got interested in gardening. And it's been kind of a parade all the way since. It's comes and it gets better, and it's becoming more and more of a, I suppose you could call it a hobby, but it's a lot more than a hobby today.
Yeah, how has it grown? What do you do now that you didn't do, let's say, when you were working?
Well, when I was working, number one, the garden that I am in now, I was in the Hartford area, and our home here on Cape Cod was a weekend garden. So I started off, the house that I had purchased was a little, what they call on the rough side. You got a little bit of lawn and mostly rough, and I'm not big on rough, so I started planting. I started actually with daylilies, and I was interested as to how I could get into the daylily world. Didn't know anything really about whether there were societies or whatever they might be.
Oh, you just thought they were beautiful.
Yeah, extremely so. Uh-huh. And we happened to stop at Heritage Plantation, or I think it's Heritage Museums and Gardens now, in Sandwich. And they happened to have a nationally registered daylily, or they call it Hemerocallis display garden. And I never realized that there were that many daylilies involved. And back then there were probably, if I was to guess, maybe 20 or 30,000 registered daylilies. And my wife and I, all of a sudden I realized this has got to be the plant that I want to grow. So we ran back to the car, got a pad, and I started listing all the daylilies that I liked. And next thing you know, five daylilies into it, I said, oh, this one's even better, put a star there. Well, when we were done, we ended up with three pages and up to five stars, I think. So, but that's basically how I got to know that there were a lot of daylilies around.
Oh, so you fell in love with gardening because you were removing weeds and helping neighbors, and then suddenly you were inspired.
Yes, inspired, plus it gave me some interest that I needed to do. A lot of my friends are golfers, fishermen, but frankly, I just like getting my hands dirty. And when I started off planting my daylilies, I started, actually it was a pretty good order, but at that time I wouldn't spend more than $5 a plant. And I think I probably had maybe 70 or 80 plants that I had started in this daylily garden. And it's kind of grown from there.
That's so really inspiring and interesting. You know, thinking about that, Dan, we're moving toward a time in our society where many more men are going to be alive until they're 80. Mm-hmm. And yet, as of now, there aren't as many men gardening, which is why I thought you'd be so interesting to interview, because you not only garden, you actually have a huge love affair with daylilies and what else?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I belong to a lot of societies and garden clubs. And in a few instances, I'm probably the, let's say, token male of the club. It certainly has gotten much better since then when I first started, because at one time there were only one or two men. The percentage is still substantially low, where it might be 10% of the total membership that are male. I'm not really sure why. Frankly, I'm concerned. One of the reasons that I absolutely love being involved in flowers, or of an interest, let's call it an interest, is the fact that it keeps my mind going. I'm constantly thinking of things that I want to either do or purchase or get rid of or whatever it might be. But it's something that keeps me active, because I'm at a point in life where I want to stay active. I've seen too many instances where people retire from work and are bored, and I don't want to be bored,
no.
Which I certainly am not.
Tell us about the societies you belong to, because maybe some of our listeners don't know how many flower societies there are.
Well, you know, it's funny, Margaret, because when I was first got interested in daylilies, I had no idea that there was even a daylily society. I just was that much of a novice as far as flowers go. And we happened to be at the Hartford Flower Show, and I was starting to get an interest in flowers. And we went around, and I believe it was the Extension Service in Connecticut, and I asked them if there was any kind of society or club or anything that happened to do with daylilies. And she took my name. She said she would look into it and took my name. And at that time, I lived in south of Hartford. And the first meeting, which happened to be a regional meeting, happened to be in Hamden, which is just north of New Haven, which was only like 20 minutes away. So I went down to that first, it was actually a regional meeting. Turned out there are daylily societies all over the country. I'm not sure how many there are, but if I was to guess, there's probably maybe 150 or 200, or could even be more, daylily societies. Since that time, I have been past president of the New England Daylily Society. I'm a trustee of the New England Hosta Society. I'm treasurer of the American Hemerocallis Society, Region 4. I belong to the Cape Cod Hydrangea Society, which is interesting because when you mention 200 or 300 daylily societies, there are only four hydrangea societies in the country.
Oh, really?
I believe there's one in the South. It's either Louisiana or somewhere, Washington, Oregon, and now this one that we've established on the Cape. And hydrangeas are great. I belong to the Wellfleet Gardeners. I'm also treasurer of the Cape Cod Rhododendron Society. There's really not too many more societies that I have time to get into. So,
you're obviously passionate about gardening.
Yes.
And it seems to me you like gardeners, or you wouldn't be joining this community as fully as you have.
You know, Margaret, I think one of the best parts on gardening, and my garden is, I don't want to call it a public garden, My daylily garden is now, and I do compete with Heritage, is a nationally registered Hemerocallis display garden, which means Hemerocallis in Greek means beauty for a day, or daylilies is what it's all about.
Oh.
And because of the amount of daylilies that I have, I get an awful lot of people that come. Since then, I've really gotten involved in hosta and hydrangeas also. But the people that come, it's very difficult to find someone that is involved in flowers and is a miserable person. There are some, I have to admit, that aren't happy unless they're unhappy. But most of the people, the nicest part of the job is to get to know the people that are involved in flowers. They always ask questions. They're always interested as to any input that you might be able to have.
Mm. You're known, as I understand, as Dan the Lily Man. Did you give yourself that name, or did your friends in the gardening community, particularly the Hemerocallis community, give you that name?
I'm not sure really where it came. It's kind of rhymes. As you can see, I really don't look like a lily man, except I'm sure that, and I'm not sure what a lily man is supposed to look like.
No, I understand.
I've had people walk right by me asking if I knew where Dan the Lily Man was. apparently because I look like a drill sergeant or something along that line. So
yes, we should tell our listeners that in fact you have a crew cut and you have excellent upright posture. You do look like a sergeant.
Nope. Thank
and not that's again a compliment, not a criticism.
Thank you.
But on the other hand, Dan the Lily Man is a very, very funny name for someone who looks and acts the way you do.
Yes, thank you.
But yes. And tell me this, besides liking the gardening community, and you like the cheerfulness and the good mood and the upbeat appearance of most people, what do you get from fellow gardeners? I mean, for example, you said you're a member of the Wellfleet Gardeners Club, which is here on Cape Cod, and I take it you go to meetings. What happens at those meetings that gives you something?
Number one, the meetings, Margaret, and this is true with almost all societies, is we are having trouble getting young people into the society. And this is true whether it's a Rotary or whatever the society might be. I would say that there are the vast majority of the members in almost all the societies probably start at mid-40s and run up through 70s, 80s. I know in our daily society, we still have members that are late 80s that are hybridizing. And here in the north, hybridizing means that you are taking the pollen from one flower, putting it on the pistil of another flower, and then waiting for the seed to be produced so you can plant it. Well, it takes 3 years to find what the flower looks like that you just made the cross of. And so that's really positive thinking when you start to think about people that are in their 90s and it takes 3 years. So to me, that's where the interest goes, the people that are involved in it, the camaraderie, because everybody has an interest. And it is amazing what most people are looking for as far as just trying to make their gardens better, or and people that when you get to talk to people and you think that they're, let's say, a novice gardener, and all of a sudden they have an expertise on one of the many flowers, whether it might be house plants or vegetable gardening or whatever it might be. But most people are very expert, and because you're expert in something else, they're always questioning you as to whether there's information that they can obtain from you.
Well, you're obviously inspired by your colleagues and so on. We have to take a break now.
And
when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more. Maybe we won't revisit inspiration, but we may visit a topic that's very close to my heart, which is enrichment, especially between 60 and 80. Life has to grow and have a quality, and it has to shine, I think. So we'll take a break. Welcome back to At Sixes and Sevens, Dan, the Lily Man, Dan Pisoni.
Thank you.
Stopped talking before the break, we were talking about what benefit people are to one another when they become gardeners and what the community gives to one another. And I wonder what you think the good reasons are for men, particularly between 60 and 80. What benefit do you think men would get from this activity?
In observing what I've seen in the past is, and what frankly terrifies me, is being bored or not having an interest that'll keep you active. And to me, gardening is one of the best things that you can do. Whether you're creating a garden, you're trying to maintain a garden, you give an interest on, and every year you got to plant new annuals, perennials come up, you need to fertilize and water. So I think that the biggest thing is that it you are constantly giving some thought as to what you want to do with your specific garden. the interest that you have in the garden. And the biggest thing is that once you start getting an interest in it, you need to go to the store, a nursery, or whatever it is to buy plants, and all of a sudden you realize that your neighbor down the street is there buying plants also, and he has basically had the same interest.
Yes, so. And you said in the societies and in the clubs, the majority of people are women. Would you have a suggestion as to how to get men more involved? Would you do that through advertising? Would you do it through the bulletin board at the nursery? Or I know we're trying it here at Sixes and Sevens. Yeah. We're trying to convince men that this is a worthy interest.
I think that where men would enter into the picture is that they need to understand that it's not necessarily a woman's occupation. Most of the nurseries, and this is the business end of the flower world, are run by men or families, but usually the president or whatever it is a man. And for some reason, and I can't answer the question as to why the vast number are women, with the exception of there's, for example, our Wellfleet Gardeners meets on Wednesday afternoon. Well, if you're just turning 60, there's a good chance that mom has retired or stayed home, and she's the one that's been interested in gardening, whereas the man might still be working, and now he tends to feel that it's a woman's quote occupation. It's really not, but hobby. Where he might end up wanting to not join, or might feel a little out of place. And it's really not true. It's the interest. It's not the people that are there. And I'm a firm believer that if you have any interest at all, and you want to be fairly good at what you do, you don't have to be an expert, but fairly good at what you do, is make yourself involved with other people that basically have the same interests.
Yes, yeah. You know? Well, many men golf, for example, during that 20-year period. And it seems to me that the skills that are in a sport like that are skills that also apply in the garden. But I don't know that idea translates to the practical situation, because men don't see other men gardening very, very much. And yet it's hugely enriching to be in the garden, and it takes a lot of skill. Can you comment on that?
You're talking to someone that probably enjoys playing golf. Unfortunately, the older I get, at one time in my life, I was always hoping that I could hit my age. Now I'm at the age that, frankly, I couldn't hit back when I could really hit the ball, so to say. My best friend plays probably 4 or 5 days a week. But his problem is that he keeps having back problems, and I just played with him the other day, and he seems to think that his back problems are a result of all the golf that he's playing.
Are you convincing him?
That's one reason. I'm not convincing him, because I think he's a nut when it comes to golf, but there's going to be a point where all of a sudden he's going to try to determine that maybe he ought to think there might be other things in life other than golf. And it's going to be very difficult. Let's face it, Margaret, everybody doesn't golf. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the population that golf. So let's talk to the other part of the population that is trying to decide what to do, what interest I can have. And there's a lot of different interests out there. But I think that I have been and feel very satisfied in the gardening aspect. It's something that you can do by yourself. It's something that you can get involved with your spouse or family, neighbors. There are very, very few people that aren't interested in flowers. And I think the ones that aren't interested in flowers, it's only because they really don't have a knowledge of it, and they don't want to make it look like they don't have a clue as to what you're talking about or so forth. Mm-hmm. You can get that on visitors that come to the garden. You'll get a group, it could be four or five people. Four of them are very interested in everything you say, and the other one is could care less about what you're saying. And that's.
Do you do some, I know you're talking about informal teaching when people come to visit your garden and see the displays and so on, but do you do some other education?
I don't, other than in the societies.
In the societies.
I do PowerPoint presentations and speak. We have many times in societies for the new members that come in and are interested as to what to do, what fertilizers to use, how often do I water, and whatever it is, where you think it's not important because it's something that you've been doing all your life. But the person that is starting, it's very interested. They are very interested as to what is necessary as far as growing a particular plant. Uh-huh. It's kind of a joke around the business, and it's really quite simple, is that, you know, there's 10 things that you do when you plant a new plant, and that is water, 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 water. I think I got them all, but anyway, water once a week. For a once a day for a week and once a week for a month, and then it goes from there. But most people don't realize that, just like you and me, you need to water. Uh-huh. And the more you get into it and involved in it, you will start to realize that when you start talking to them and looking at them, and that the water and fertilize, just take care of them as you would take care of yourself.
Right. You are a person who's green, as they say, when it comes to fertilizer. Can you talk a little bit about, besides water, what the 10th thing might be, 9 waters, and what's the
well,
tenth thing?
Well, probably the third thing might be giving something to eat, as which would be fertilizer. We out here in the Cape are very green-minded, mainly because we don't have reservoirs. All the water that we have is from rainwater. So we're very cognizant of the fact that we really need to be green. That means cutting down on chemical-type fertilizers and so forth. I have, years ago, being, quote, a green person, is I'm very big on Milorganite, which is a natural fertilizer. And by being natural, it means it's not chemically produced. If you go buy a bag of fertilizer, which is 10-10-10, there's 10% nitrogen, 10% phosphorus, and 10% potash, I believe it is, but it's all chemicals. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, and practically all through my entire life, I was always told that you really can't throw these on a brand new plant, because if it gets down into the new leaves that are coming up, it's going to burn them. That's how chemical these are. Whereas Milorganite, it's natural. Frankly, it comes from the sewers of Milwaukee. I'm not sure why just the sewers in Milwaukee, unless it's all the beer that they drink out there. But there is, when you first put it on, it's little black pellets. When you first put it on, there is a very slight odor, not something that's offensive, but there is a very slight odor. And you can throw, you don't even have to bend over. You can just throw these on, and rabbits don't like the smell. Deer don't like the smell. It only lasts for about 3 weeks. You don't smell it at all after the first day, but that is where the fertilizer that I use, and I fertilize just in all my plants. I fertilize once a year in the spring, and that's it.
Yes, the enriching aspect of what you're talking about is truly that you're operating as a gardener on so many levels. Socially, in the community, you're at your own, usually very near your family's home, and mm-hmm. so on, and you're taking care of the environment with the decisions you make, and you're beautifying the world with what you choose to grow. It's a deeply enriching activity, I think.
Yes, very.
Yeah, and do you think about that when you're out in the garden? Do you fantasize about how lovely everything is?
I fantasize. I would say.
It's part of the fun.
It's creating something that I certainly enjoy, and creating something that so many other people enjoy. I have garden tours. I think this year we probably had 600 or 700 people go through the gardens. You know, it's I am kind of more of a collector than I certainly am a gardener, because it's a garden. But there's a joke that there's no weeds in my yard. It's only because you know, whenever I see something starting, I pull it up. But between the 800 daylilies that I have, all registered, labeled daylilies, 300 hosta, about 60 hydrangea, and I think there's probably 60 or 70 rhododendron, it kind of keeps you busy, but it also gives you something to do. You go out, you check each plant and so forth. You can see if they're starting to be stressed because of lack of water, especially when it comes to rhododendrons and hydrangea. We all know all hydrangea is really neat, because once that's stressed or lack of water, it just starts to wilt. As soon as the sun gets off it, it pops right back again. But you can see if it needs water.
And, you can. So, yeah. We're going to take another little break, and when we come back, we're going to shine a different light on this. But you certainly have been persuasive in terms of the enriching aspects of gardening. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back here to At Sixes and Sevens, Dan Pisoni. You really are the most engaging gardener I've met.
Thank you, Margaret.
And the conversation has just been far-reaching in many ways. But now we're going to talk a little specifically about gardening and what it takes to become an experienced, maybe an expert gardener, and why some people even go so far as to take a credential master gardener. But let's start at the simplest level. Let's say you're talking to people who get all the inspiration, they get all the enriching aspects, and they certainly hear the satisfaction and excitement in your life. Mm-hmm. Where do they start? Men or women?
Men or women. I think the first thing, you need some kind of interest. It would give, what can I do? I have all this lawn outside, or all this wooded area, or depends on where and what type of garden you would like. In most instances, once the interest is there, and you can usually pick up the interest by neighbors might have a nice garden. A lot of gardens are professionally done, but there's no reason why the individual can't, because it's just a matter of putting your time and interest into creating what you want. I mean, I don't have a huge yard. It's only about, it's probably a little less than 3/4 acre. But gave some thought as to where I would like to put a garden. And if I come up with a place that I would like to put a garden, and gardens don't have to be just a straight 3 by 20 foot long garden. One of the biggest and nicest ideas that somebody gave me as far as gardening is to take a garden hose, determine where you want the garden, take a garden hose, lay it down so it kind of
spirals.
Yes, spiral. That's it. And lay the garden down, garden hose down, and you can push it or twist it any place that you want. And then if it's in a grassy area or a rough area or whatever it might be, mark out where the garden hose was. And then, as in anything, you have to have a good foundation. And by foundation, you can't plant in straight sand or hard pan or whatever it might be. I was in Connecticut, and we had a lot of hard pan and a ton of rocks.
Hard pan? Packed earth?
Yeah, hard pan. The problem is with most houses today is they dig the foundation and they scrape off all of the topsoil. And then when they go to replace it, rather than 6 inches of topsoil, they replace it with 2 inches of topsoil. You're getting down is you're getting down to the support of the topsoil that's supposed to be on the ground. Here on the Cape, it's sand. My yard, I consist of maybe a half an inch of brown, if you want to call it topsoil. And underneath is Nauset Beach, and it's pure sand. No rocks, great digging, but the problem is sand doesn't support moisture, number one. Any fertilizers you pond just runs right through because it just doesn't support water. So the first thing you need to do is to establish whether you have something. Now, if there are a lot of people that have, there is enough dirt or topsoil or something that'll support the water. Another big problem on the Cape here is clay. I always moaned and groaned about all the sand that I had, and I had to get rid of all the sand. And a neighbor of mine, not too far up the road, maybe 4 or 5 blocks up the road, was moaning and groaning that he had the clay. And I'm saying, oh, you got it made because, I got all the sand, doesn't support water. Well, he unfortunately came down with MS, and I went up and helped him in his gardens and got into this clay. And this is like trying to plant things on a sidewalk. I mean, this clay, you couldn't dent with a shovel. It was so hard. So anyway, I'm happy. Through the years, I've gotten so all my sand is now, it supports because I've enriched it with, and that's what I probably try to get into, is you need to do something called double dig.
Double dig.
Double dig.
Okay.
Is that now you've established where you want your garden, whether it's straight or serpentine with the hoses or whatever it might be. And what you do is you maybe take 2 feet, and anyone can do this, you take 2 feet of where you're going to start the garden. And you pull, if there's grass or whatever it might be, you pull the grass off, and any dirt and good dirt that you might have, you pull that to you. So actually, you're standing on your lawn and you're pulling all of the, let's say, a 2 foot square piece of all of the good material towards you. Now you're down to the bad material. In my case, it's sand, it could be rocks or clay or whatever it might be. But you need something that's at least maybe 5 or 6 inches that'll support water and nutrition that the plants need. Now you dig that out, remove that, and now take what you're standing in, which was the original top part of this, and put it into the hole that you have. Oh. Now you go to the next 2 feet, you bring all of that and pull it into the hole that you're now standing in. You've gotten all of the good stuff that's going to be on the bottom of this, and then you dig that out and get rid of that. So when you're all done by doing this, continuing for the amount that you need, and you can do one section, and that's the greatest part about gardening. You can go out and spend 15 minutes or half an hour, an hour. I used to spend hours. Now I'm good for maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours tops in the morning. Don't tell anybody, but after lunch I take a nap now, which I probably would never let anybody know, especially my best friend. And maybe an hour in the afternoon. But that goes from 12 to 14 hours when I was back in my 40s and 50s. So it starts to get slower, but on the other hand, it gives you an interest to go out and do this. So you can do a little bit at a time or whatever you might be. Now, when you have your garden and the garden has been created, unfortunately, you've gotten rid of quite a bit of the undersoil that was there, the soil that was no good. So you need to fill this up. You can go to the, here on the Cape, we can go to our dumps where they have, they call it mulch, I guess, which is our leaves and sticks and everything that's all ground up. A lot of people are concerned about the fact that it might be a problem with it. We've had practically every club and society I belong to have it checked. They hear everybody's concerned about the fact that it might be a too acid because all we have is pine trees and oak trees, whereas really in the composting part of it, it neutralizes it. So it's basically neutral. But what it does do is support water and roots and things like that. Yes. So you can fill it up with that. Or you can go to your local nursery and get the any kind of topsoil or manure or whatever it might be that will enrich this.
So you're involved in gardening, in building a garden. You're involved in the recycling process. And you're nourishing the environment with other pieces of the environment.
Correct. Which is kind of a joke, because I talk to people at compost and they say, oh, we compost. I have one of these barrels that I put my compost in, whether it's kitchen scraps or whatever it might be. And it's a thing that you can turn. It's almost like a big washing machine drum. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there thinking about all the stuff that I compost. And every leaf, everything. We don't do table scraps because I'm a big eater and we really don't have too many table scraps. I compost actually everything. Every leaf that comes out of my yard, when the daylilies die down, the hosta die down and everything, all of those leaves go onto my compost pile. It's coming up pretty soon. We're in October, sometime before Thanksgiving. I'm going to take the current pile. This is the pile that I've been creating since last fall and all through this summer. And it's a pretty good pile. And I just take that pile and I turn the entire pile over. And this is something else that you can do for 5 minutes. In other words, basically what I'm trying to say is that no matter how physically fit you are, the nice part of gardening is you can put as much energy or exercise into it as that you want.
So you can work in short spurts, even as short as 5 minutes or 15 minutes or an hour.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my compost is, and the biggest thing in compost, if you take dry leaves and put them in the pile, next year they're still going to be dry in the bottom of your compost. So I just water them as I'm building my compost pile, which I'll be starting come November. And it works perfect. And talk about returning things back to the earth is that I have these wheelbarrows and wheelbarrows and wheelbarrows of compost, and I can use it within a year. It's more like a leaf mold. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look exactly like dirt, but it breaks down very quickly and looks like dirt and is nice as far as a ground cover or anything that you want to use it for.
So let's say someone is your age, three-quarters of the way between sixes and sevens.
All right.
How big a garden would you advise someone to start with? Let's say that a person has been harboring the desire to do some gardening, but, oh, I can't take on too much.
I would say it's up to the person. Number one, probably their physical ability is to do. And, people can have gardens. I've seen absolutely beautiful gardens that are no more than 10 or 15 feet wide.
I see.
And the nice part about it is once you get established, I had a neighbor one of the local nurseries come up. They happened to be summer people, so it was a summer home that they had. And they would spend $1,200 to $1,500 a year in planting annuals in this backyard garden that they had. And some years it looked absolutely beautiful, and other years for $1,200 or $1,500, it didn't look very good. And I kept saying to, his name was Bob, and I kept saying, Bob, I said, you know, if you took the $1,200 or $1,500 and bought perennials, I says, it's a one-shot deal, and the garden just keeps getting better every year.
Right.
So now, Bob had a very large back garden, but you can start with a piece 3 feet wide and 10 feet long.
I see.
And once all of a sudden you start to see how beautiful these are, and now you have a friend that would like to swap, let's say, this daylily with that daylily, or this hosta with that hydrangea, or whatever it might be, and bug catches you pretty quick.
It does catch you.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a break in a minute, and when we come back, if you wouldn't mind, we'll talk a little bit about going to the nursery. You made the stepping off point just now when you said that your friend Bob would just put all this money into annuals when there's a better way to do it. But also, I think people might benefit from hearing you say how to connect with the right resources. If you are going to have a little garden or if you're going to take on a much bigger project, you still need to know who to talk to and where to go and maybe even We've already told them only green fertilizer, like manure, mulorganite, and try to use the resources that you have in the garden you're working with, and so on, and plenty of water.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk a little about the commercial gardening enterprise that we all know so very well when we come back. Thanks. Welcome back to At Sixes and Sevens. Today, we're having the most enjoyable conversation with Dan Pisoni, Dan the Lily Man, because he has had a lifelong love of daylilies. And as a person, I must confess, Dan, who absolutely thinks daylilies are the best of the best in the garden, I understand why you think they're so, so beautiful.
I actually got involved with daylilies because there's nothing, you don't find any bees in them. They don't have any diseases. And I should say this of us above the Mason-Dixon line. The only thing that might bother them every now and then is a deer. If a deer rambles through your yard, they'll only eat the buds and the flower. They don't touch the leaves at all. So I enjoy them because, number one, there's really nothing that bothers them, and you really can't kill them. They are just an exceptional plant.
Yes. I also think they're incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. If people are going to be persuaded to do gardening as a, you know, a relaxation, as an exercise, as a tool for keeping their minds alert and their bodies outdoors. Mm-hmm. Those are very good reasons to do gardening. What resources do you recommend to people? I mean, do they start at a local garden club as you did, or regional garden meetings? Do they go to the nursery in the neighborhood? Can you comment on that?
I would say if I was going to start a garden and really wasn't sure what to do, and I can go back to my friend Bob. The only reason that Bob was a president and CEO of a large insurance company in New York, and he had zero time for gardening. I'd like to say that Bob took to gardening it ended up basically being his pride and joy was his gardens. Originally, he had no idea what an annual or perennial was. When he finally decided, I'm going to take my $1,200 or $1,500 and go buy perennials, he took me by the hand and we went down to our local nursery and our garden center. And next thing I knew, I have a pickup truck. We wouldn't fit all in his car, so I had to go back and get my pickup truck. And we ended doing that way. And the simplest thing is that generally what Bob did was took the expertise that I had, which I guess it's expertise, but I told him, showed him what I thought would grow well in his garden for the amount of garden that he had. And Bob was a kind of an exception because it was a pretty good size garden. And all I did was place the plants. In other words, I took the pot, stuck it where I thought it would be well, and he has done and did all the rest.
Enjoyed the digging.
He absolutely loved it. Number one, he was struggling as to finding something that would interest him. And I think they used to go to Florida in the wintertime, of course. So, and he started doing the same thing in Florida. I don't know too much about tropical plants, but the few times I went to visit him down there, he had outstanding gardens down there. And I don't mean huge, nothing like I have, but huge gardens, but, you know, foundation plantings. I mean, there's too many places that, you know, we buy a house today and they stick three bushes in front of the house and it's, there's no reason why if you want to pretty up the front of your house, it's just to put a garden in front of the few plants that you might have there. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that number one, if you know anyone that is in gardening, They would be more than glad to assist you, give you advice as to what you might or might not do. You can go to any garden center, and the garden center will also advise you, and in many instances go take a quick look. Don't forget, they're in business to make money, and if they're here to support you as far as the type of garden that you want to put in or the type of plants that you might want to put in, then they would be more than glad to come and just give you some advice.
Mm-hmm. And how do you decide whether the advice you're getting is bona fide, whether people are just selling you something, or how can you tell? Can you?
Usually the person that's going to go to your house or give you experience is the experienced person. Now, we all know that garden centers, they're there and they're busy time. They just need somebody they might not really know a heck of a lot about plants. Mm-hmm. I would say that the neighbor or the gardener that you have can give you some great advice. It's always a matter of trial and error. There are certain things you need to determine how sunny the location is. There's just certain things that don't do well in the sun. There's certain things that don't do well in the shade. So, and those are the specific things that can help you. Depending on the type of garden that you have. You might want a straight shade garden, which is, you say, I have no sun, and everything I have is shade. I was a daylily man for 30 years. I was a daylily guy. And it was a weekend garden. And when we finally retired and came up to the Cape full time, when I went on garden tours or conventions, it seemed like everybody, all the daylily growers, didn't know what to do in the shade, so they planted hosta. And it wasn't too long that I was here before I started establishing a hosta garden. And now, Dan the hosta man doesn't quite sound quite as frilly, let's call it, as Dan the lily man. I even have Lily Man on my license plate, so I've come a long way.
Yes, you have. So the idea is connect with people who give you good information.
Correct.
A friend, the neighbor, people in a garden right. club, but also at the nursery, connect with somebody who can answer your questions, no
exactly.
matter how elementary
exactly.
the questions are.
The only difference is, and I would say that most people know someone that's got a garden or some knowledge of a garden. I would say every year, every town has a garden club that has a sale. And the sale is, I know our Wellfleet gardeners come Memorial Day weekend, every member contributes flowers from their garden to sell. And number one, they're all members. Number two, they're all interested in gardening. And number three, they love to expand on letting you think that they know a lot of what they're talking about. And 99% of the time, they do. And if it's something that you have a rapport with, then they would be more than glad to. But it's just a matter of taking the initiative to going out and finding someone that you can give you a hand, whether it's a professional person at the nursery or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. When you go to the nursery, if you have an idea, there are certain things that you want to make sure you have. Make sure that if he's going to sell you a hosta, for example, that the hosta and every tag that's in the plant tells you what the maximum is going to be. This hosta gives you the size of the leaves, for example. It might be 5 inches across and 9 inches high. That plant might mature at 5 feet across. Well, you might not want to put a 5-foot plant. But there's also mm-hmm. miniatures and small. Miniature gardening, which is something else that if you don't have a lot or you're in a condo or something like that, there are a whole ton of miniature type flowers out, and I'm more interested in miniature hosta, but between container planting, troth planting, and the new rage is fairy gardens, whereas if you have a tree with a little hole in the bottom, people are planting, like making a little miniature fairy world out of that, so which means that you need mini hosta. I have hosta in my garden that the leaves look like tractor seats. I mean, you know, they're 15 inches across and 24 inches high.
Right.
But I also have hosta in my garden that the leaves are no bigger than my pinky finger. So there's a large variety. So you need to determine, number one, how big is the plant? And the tag on the plant that you get in any nursery will show you exactly what the size will end up being.
So you have to connect with education, too. You have to discipline yourself to read the tags, perhaps go to the library and look at catalogs or gardening magazines. But educating yourself is part of this demand.
Yeah. Home and Garden television channel. What is it? It's Home and, I think it's Home and Garden.
Yes, I don't know that one.
Well, anyway, they have they sell homes in the afternoon, but on the weekends they have a gardening show.
Oh, I see.
And they show specific things that need to be done in gardening. But there are just different things. I would suggest that if you're really not sure as to what you want to do as far as a garden goes, and you don't have a clue as to where to start, you got to know someone or know someone who knows someone that knows a little bit about gardening. And all you need is someone that knows a little bit about gardening.
Mm-hmm.
Through trial and error, it is a fantastic interest. I spend an awful lot of time moving plants around because this plant wasn't supposed to be any more than 2 feet wide, and all of a sudden now it's 5 feet wide and it's running into other plants. So, the biggest thing is that it keeps me busy and
yes.
keeps me interested. And even right here, I mean, if it wasn't for my garden, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you, Margaret.
No, so. It's true. It's true. And you wouldn't be connecting with so many people in our audience. I really think you have done a masterful job, not just as a gardener, but as a member of our community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are going to be 78 million of us who are between 60
yes.
and 80. And to connect with that many people, I think is a great
yeah.
privilege, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you'd like to say before we end our meeting time?
I think that getting into gardening or coming up with some interest, and to me gardening is there because it's always we're just outside your door or on your patio or whatever, but getting into plants, it brings you to where, to me, it probably all started. If you get something that you plant and all of a sudden it starts to bloom, you can see exactly the joy of this is what I've done, this is what I've created, this is what I take care of. It's almost like a child or a pet. If you don't take care of it, it's not going to flourish. If you take care of it, and plants don't need an over amount of loving, but they do need some interest, like water. Okay. And the biggest thing is once you get interested in it, then you can go to someone else's, a friend's garden or something else. But it is amazing the number of people that are involved in gardening that just would support your interest. And once your interest starts, it'll just grow.
Well, I thank you very much for this wonderful hour together, and I'm sure that you have piqued the interest, the imagination, and we hope the behavior of people who've listened to you today. And maybe there'll be thousands more gardeners.
Thank you.
In this world.
Happy gardening.
Thank you. And this is Margaret Rappaport at Sixes and Sevens.